How's it going? Thanks for stopping by, and thank you for helping us become one of the fastest growing podcasts on iTunes and Google Play. You can subscribe there along with YouTube as well. Today we talk to business with Bay Area actor Nina Martina. I first became familiar with her work in an independent film called Jimmy Kendrick you can see on Amazon Prime. Now branching out to the theater, we'll be performing next month on the Monterey Peninsula. Had a chance to catch up and talk about the transition to stage, along with a very candid discussion on dealing with food addiction. You want to check that out. And proof positive, it's never too late to chase your dreams. Let's catch up with my good friend, Nina Martina. One of my favorite people, actor Nina Martina, passionate about movies and television, but now branching out, a new realm doing theater. Tell us about that new project you're working on.
Yeah, I am. No, this is really exciting and fun for me. Very different, but, you know, always trying to kind of grow and stretch a little bit. So a fellow actor of mine who split his time between L.A. and up here at Monterey where I live, he just was like, you know, I've been very busy. You know, let's go ahead and do something together. Let's create something. And he had told me that he actually done a one-man show. He is a very, very talented, besides being a very talented actor, he's a very amazing vocalist and pianist. And he said he had done this one-man show on Liberace before. And I thought, wow, that's fantastic. And he said, you know, I've adapted it. So I've already done the show, but I've adapted it so that I could have two more actors in it that would really expand on the experience and the entire show. He said, so do you think you'd like to do it? And because it really is sort of a one-man show, and I play several different parts, I just thought it would be a perfect opportunity to try something like this on a very low scale. I mean, in terms of, you know, not a tremendous amount of commitment, not a tremendous amount of having to learn a lot of really new things other than my lines, which I know how to do that. But the piano and the stage is, piano takes up most of the stage. And so it's quite small. There's a little bit of blocking in terms of moving around for me. But in the most part, I just get to come out and interact with him as various different characters and have a lot of fun. My main character is his French maid, Becky. But then I get to play like his old instructor or something, this pianist Paderewski, and I get to play his piano teacher when he was a little kid, and I get to play, what is it, Bugsy Siegel, the one that did created Las Vegas, right?
Right.
The whole thing. Yeah, so I get to be the mobster. I think that's going to be hysterical. I mean, going back and forth behind the stage and coming back out and wearing, like, you know, the glasses with the nose and the mustache or something, with my French maid costume underneath the cape that I'm wearing or the trench coat. I just think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be really funny and a good stretch for me. And it's going to be a really, really entertaining because, like I said, John Mark is really an incredibly skilled vocalist and pianist. So they're going to be hearing everything from Boogie Woogie to Ragtime to Chopin and Rachmaninoff. And so it's really cool because, you know, it'll be very, very entertaining. It'll be a lot of fun. So it's a small little venue, 50 seats. So that's why we're putting out 16 shows. So yeah, that's what I'm doing next month.
That's awesome. I always wanted to hang out with a woman that would be willing to be called different names. You know, it hasn't gone over well at home. You know, I'd give a wig to my wife and, hey, let me call you Trixie. But it hasn't really worked out the way I'd hoped for.
Exactly.
Hey, so what are the dates? I don't even know why I went there. Hey, what are the dates of the show coming up?
Let's see. Our opening night will be August 9th. And it will run, we're going to have Friday, Saturday, Sunday shows, and then that's going to run for the rest of the month. The last day being the 30th will be our last night. I can give you the link as far as where they can buy tickets and where it's in Pacific Grove. And like I said, it isn't even actually it isn't a theater. We're creating the theater. Okay. So we rented a space and we created a stage and we actually got theater seats, which we're really excited about that. So it looks quite, yeah, very authentic and everything like that. So it'll be great because it's in a good location. I mean, I don't think a lot of people really think about that place and where it should be, where it is, where they're going to have the play and everything like that. But August is a busy week. August is, you know, peak season for tourists and everything like that. And so it's also car week is when we're going to be doing it. And so it's a great time to really advertise and get people out there. And with only 50 seats, we're hoping that it's really not going to be an issue as far as like really making sure that the house is full every night, you know, when we do our performances and everything like that. So we're both really excited about it. I mean, I think it's going to be fantastic. I think it's going to be just a blast, you know, no matter what, it'll just be a very good entertaining show, you know.
That sounds like a good getaway to do the whole Cannery Row thing and then maybe the aquarium, you know, catch your show. Yep. Just make a weekend of it and hang out in Monterey.
Correct. Absolutely. And, you know, if you're in PG, it's the same thing. That's a walking town. So, you know, yeah, you could go to go have a really nice dinner, I don't know if you should advertise for them or that, but, you know, they're like what Michelin star Passion Fish in Pacific Grove. They're really good. So you could go have a nice meal and then literally could walk around the corner and there you would be for the show. And, you know, they have some nice wine bars and tapas bars and different things like that there. So you can literally make an evening of it sort of thing. It should be really, really nice.
You know, as actors, especially when you're doing film and television commercials, it's so much about, you know, your face and your eyes. Now we're doing something different with theater where you're more expressive and gesturing. Is that something that's a challenge for you or something that's easy to adapt to?
Oh, I think it's easy to adapt to. Come on, you know me. Yeah. I mean, you know what I'm like. I'm kind of larger than life anyway, you know what I mean? As far as just the way I dress and my talk, I have a loud voice and loud laugh. So not a problem at all. If anything, it's going to be like I'm going to let my inner theater person out. Because, you know, as you just said, you know, when you do film and things like that, something as subtle as a smirk and a raised eyebrow can be amazing on the camera, you know what I mean? Because it's gigantic on the screen, you know, so it has a lot of impact. Whereas, of course, with live and theater, you know, you have to project and you have to use your whole body. You can't just do this little tiny gesture because they're probably not going to really get it or see it. So I look forward to that. I look forward to being able to not be like, Kenny, you're too loud. Calm down.
Right.
It's like, no, I don't have to do that. I can be as loud as I want or whatever, or as expressive as I want. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a blast. And I love working with John Mark, and that all has a lot to do with it, too, is that when you have great chemistry with everybody and you know that you get to be part of this really amazing, special thing with this very talented person, you know, that's exciting for me. I enjoy that.
Yeah, I was thinking about young actors when they're doing film, especially independent films, and there's a tendency to overact, like they're doing theater on video, right? Because we're supposed to just be subtle with our facial expressions and gestures and read the eyes, and you see people be mad and they just, you know, do this whole theatrical thing on camera. So it's certainly two different art forms.
Yes, absolutely. And I learned a new word when I got a little bit of a critique on something. I says, well, your performance was rather external for me. And I went, what does that mean?
What does that mean?
So apparently that means it's a nice way of saying you're overacting. It's too much. You're subtle for camera. You're not subtle enough. Okay. Is essentially what that's about, you know? So I thought that was really interesting because as you know, and we've gone to these classes together, my gosh, it just depends on the person on what they're going to see. Because one person will be, oh my gosh, that was great. And that really, you know, when you said this, that really, you know, just hit me and da, 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 da. And the next person sitting right next to him will be like, well, you know, it's just one note. It was just kind of like one note. Yes. It just didn't really, just went, you know, like they were just reading it, you know, and you're just like, okay, so you guys are both watching the same thing. Why do you, you know, why are you perceiving it that way versus the other person sees it the other way? So I, you know, again, there's that whole subjective thing, you know. I think also you understand that, you know, our power as actors, us individually as actors, okay, are bringing in our own self to the character, Okay. So when we read these things, or we read these scripts or monologues or whatever it is like that, you know, hopefully it's not only that it's just a different take in terms of how you're interpreting it, but that you're bringing yourself into that role. Okay. It's just like when you see, you know, Johnny Depp do Jack Sparrow, you know, he says he's, channeling, Keith, the Stones guy, the one that played his father in there. And so that, you know, he's bringing his style and the way that he is into that role. Okay. The critique that I got on this particular thing, if this person knew who I was, they didn't, they'd never seen me before. They would know that I talk like that and I react like that and I laugh like that. That's who I am. Okay. And so perhaps that's not to his liking, but understand that wasn't acting. That was just me saying those words of that character. That was Nina. Okay. That wasn't me trying to be this and this and this and this. It was like, no, that's, if you talk to me, I'm actually like that.
Yeah. Well, so that brings up something else. And we've gone on this off of podcasts and regular conversations. You know, you want to be liked. You want to be accepted. You want that guy's approval. So sure. It sucks not to get it and, you know, be told external.
Till the day I die, I hope that I always am able to say I'm teachable and I'm able to learn. Okay. And whether that means acting, whether that means growing as a person, as a woman, as anything, you know, as a human being, as it were. Okay. So I try to be very gracious and just say, okay, and take it to heart. You know, I'm never going to say that, oh, well, you don't know. I know everything already and you can't tell me anything because I'm perfect. It's like, well, no, but, yeah. Absolutely not. Okay. But it's strange to me when I get that kind of thing, especially when you see that such a wide divide across the board. It's very odd to me. And I know we had that discussion before when we talked about that competition class that we did. It's just like, so what were you watching? Because clearly all these other people saw something compared to you, you know.
And they might see it differently the next day. They have their different attitudes and vibe and their own things that they're dealing with that might impact how they see that performance.
Absolutely. I think that's definitely true. Yeah. So, but you're right. And it's hard. I have my coach to, I have a couple different marketing coaches and different people that help me with that. And, you know, he's always trying to tell me about how, you know, you got to let go of the result. You know, when you get that audition or when you do such and so, you know, you do it and then you're done. Your work is done. You know, you can't hang on that expectation or wishing that, oh, I didn't book it or this or this or that. Okay, so I get that because I think that that's true. You will be destroyed pretty quickly if you invest that much into every single audition and every single thing. You know, I don't know if it was you. Somebody else told me that. It's like 400 plus auditions is what Samuel L. Jackson said he went on before he even booked one.
That's crazy. I didn't tell you that. That number blows me away.
Totally does. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to stop now because I feel like a useless piece of, you know what? Right. I mean, you know?
And then Jenna Fisher said 50, like if you can get to 50, that's when you're going to book one at 50. So every time you audition, okay, well, 49 more to go before I get the yes. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for your time. And look at it that way as kind of a sales numbers game type thing.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. So I guess that I'm still working on getting to that place where it doesn't work. Well, and I do think I'm definitely a lot better. It doesn't, you know, I used to go in my car after the audition and cry like, I'm so sucked. You know? Yeah. Or just, you know, like, oh, I didn't get it, you know, or whatever. But now, you know, I would be lying if I said it doesn't affect me. I mean, I do feel something. I just would say that I'm able to let it roll off of me faster. It doesn't penetrate and like bum me out the rest of the day or something like that. I kind of go, oh, okay. And then just kind of, you know, pull up the socks and go on. You know what I mean? Just do whatever you got to do, you know.
Well, that's why most actors can't stomach that. You know, that's why, you know, many of them will be done after 3 years, 4 years, because of the outcome and the rejection.
Yep. And I find it very ironic that the very people, you know, we as actors and maybe even just creatives, you know, that write or do indie films or whatever that is, you know, create, we're generally the most insecure people anyway. And then we go into an industry of like, oh, constant rejection. Oh, and it's not just general rejection. It's very specific rejection. Like, yeah. We don't want you because you're too fit or wear glasses or dark hair or whatever it is. Things that you're like, hey, man, this is just me, you know? And you're like, I know, we don't want that.
I mean, how do you not take that personally?
I know, exactly. It's like, you can't go like, hey, no, it's me. It's not you.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's actually, it is you.
It is you.
Well, so then I guess the other side of that is, yes, but then when they pick you, then it's very specific. Oh, Day, we want you. We want your voice. We want your smile. We want, you know, buffed out body of yours or whatever. You know, it's very specific. They want you. Okay. And so there's the other side of it, but it's kind of like the Jenna Fischer thing you're saying, you got to wait 50 more times before that happens.
Yeah. That's unbelievable. I had a comedian on earlier in the week, and he'd been knocking on doors for 13 years to finally get on Comedy Central. And I asked him, you know, does that, you know, toughen you, give you thicker skin, you know, make it more rewarding because you stomached it? You know, a lot of guys had quit by then. And he goes, yeah, it was great. It was like going, you know, a marathon for a cookie. And now,
that's a great analogy.
And I love the cookie, but I don't know if I want to do another marathon to get another cookie. It was tough to stomach. I don't know if I could do that again. Yeah. So the folks that do this, you know, it's a business that has rejection built in. And, you know, to keep doing it anyway shows a lot of determination or stupidity or whatever it is that you have that keeps you going.
I don't know. Yeah. Because I certainly can't explain it, and most people certainly can't understand it. I mean, you know, at my age, as they say, you know, who do you think you are? You know, but you decided that you wanted to become a model and an actor, or you wanted to do all this, and you do what? You drive 5 hours to go to an audition and then turn around and come right back? You know, it's like, yeah, I mean, it is. If you put it like that, I guess it does sound pretty insane and the whole thing like that. But, you know, that's therein lies where your tenacity and your passion, and as they say, you get bit by the bug, whatever, you know, this is where you ask yourself, well, what drives you? Are you doing this, or am I doing this because, oh, well, I want to be rich and famous and walk the red carpet and, you know, be this big movie star? Well, not really. Exactly. I'm not. I mean, I think my answer would be that, you know, I found something that I have a tremendous passion for, that I get when I get the opportunity to do it, to act and to be in a, whether it's this theater thing or a film or a great story, you know, what that does for me inside is more than anything I've experienced before in terms of just the feeling that I get from it, the collaboration, the hope that it, you know, really moves other people or entertains them, for lack of, or anything like that, you know? And that just is so satisfying and so gratifying for me, you know? And while there's so many things that make me go, well, look at what's happened, you know, you're not, oh, this is too hard, how are you going to do that, whatever, you know, even the criticisms and the different things and the rejection, I don't know what it is. I know, maybe I'm just probably a little mental, I guess, or something, but some of that really actually drives me in the other direction and makes me say, okay, just wait, you'll see.
Yeah. Which is probably the most healthy way to look at it, you know, to keep you going, to keep you strong, to keep you resilient.
Because at the end of the day, that's really what to me is going to speak volumes. And there's also just this part of myself too, that maybe very stupidly just believes very, very much in myself and deep down that I can accomplish this, that I can do something and be really good at it, be very, very good at it, to the point that I would be in demand and that I would really be able to be part of some really interesting stories, meet some great actors and creatives. I love that. I mean, that just is fantastic to me, you know? And I didn't know that I was going to like all of this. I didn't know it until I started doing it, you know? There's a lot of stuff I don't like auditioning. Yeah. But it's part of the, you know, it's part of the whole package. It's part of what you got to do. There's a game to be played, and you can stand on the sidelines and I don't like that, or I don't want to, you know, that's fine. That's anybody's prerogative. Or you can jump in and say, yeah, well, I don't like this particular aspect of, but if it's the means to the ends to get me to this thing that I really want, sign me up. I'm there.
Hanging out with Nina Martina. Your path to get to be an actor is not typical. You didn't come out of some theater school as a 21-year-old and, you know, threw your heart and soul into it. So, yeah, how did that go down?
Wow. So that was, this is kind of like my second career because, you know, I'm not a little spring chicken here. Do boy, I got to tell numbers here, but I guess I will. I got married pretty young and had my kids and kind of really concentrated my life on that. I did have a career prior to getting married and think that I was a beauty therapist, which people often are like, okay, what does that mean? Because they don't really have an equivalent here. I studied in Britain right out of high school. I went there and lived there and then learned this trade. And a beauty therapist is under the licenses or auspices of being an esthetician, a makeup artist, skincare specialist, if you will, manicurist, nail tech type thing, massage therapist. And you could do hair as well if you wanted to, but I was never interested in being a hairdresser. So I just kind of stuck to all the aesthetics part of it, you know, skincare and facial care and massage and all that kind of thing. And so loved that, enjoyed it, had a great career because I was trained in so many things. And because I was trained in Europe, I never had a problem getting a job. I got every job I ever went out for. I mean, I worked in a lot of high-end salons and spas and gyms and all kinds of different places and enjoyed that. And then, like I said, kind of pulled back from that when I stayed home, had my children, raised them. And, you know, in that term of having that happen, I got really lost kind of thing in my identity and where I was and proceeded to gain a lot of weight and become very, very unhealthy. And so I needed to do something. I was kind of up and down, and I was really just like getting a lot of health problems from the fact that I was jumping up the scale to, I stopped weighing myself after about 250. So I don't really know how high I got. Okay. Because I just didn't, you know, about like a size 20 sort of thing. I was huge. I was really big and I was having a lot of health problems because of it. So, just inquired about bariatric surgery. I thought about getting gastric bypass. I thought about different things, but I was really kind of afraid to do that. So I ended up with a lap band, and that really worked. And really for my purposes, I really just, because I had spent a good decade or so of my life so big, I was like, you know, this would just be great. All my goal is just to be able to shop off the regular racks, not have to go to the plus size sort of thing. So I worked with a personal trainer for 2 years and dropped over 100 pounds and went down to like a size 2, which I'd never done that before. So I was approached by a magazine to tell my story. And this particular magazine also recruited for models and things like that. And so that sort of started my modeling career. And that was really all I was kind of interested in initially. I mean, the acting thing really didn't appeal to me, even though they were sort of pushing that as well, saying, yeah, we should try and think about doing commercial work. Models often do that, you know, and I was like, I mean, it was just kind of whatever. So about 2 years into that, just doing the modeling, which I was very fortunate. I did a lot of print work, fashion, glamour. I also did runway. I was very fortunate to get in some really cool local circles with designers. And because I was always the oldest person on the runway, you know, I was walking with girls that were 20 something years old, younger than I am. So that was it. My 50th birthday, that was when I became a model. That was when I started working as a model. I know. So consequently, through that and doing a lot of that work, working with these designers that did these beautiful couture gowns and things like that, they were onto something with having me be their model, because consequently, a lot of the stuff that I modeled and the things that I did really sold. Because when you go to those shows and you see these beautiful young little things that are about this big and they're modeling all of this stuff, I mean, they look beautiful, don't get me wrong. But believe me, the people that are buying those very high-end gowns are not teenagers. They're not buying their stuff for their prom there. In fact, they would put those types of clothes on and say how pretty the dress was, but go, this is something my mom would wear. And I'm like, well, I'm kind of like your mom's age right here, okay? You know, and so, you know, it was great for the shows to see a woman my age walking those runways alongside all of those young girls, you know? So, had some problems with the band and ended up having to take that out, and did not gain all of my weight back, but gained some of it. You know, I was getting older myself too, and all that good stuff. So interestingly enough, that actually put me on the map as a plus size model. Plus size meaning like a size 12 or something like that, or 14, which is definitely plus size. And, you know, anything over a size 8 in the modeling industry is considered plus size. So even the size I am now at 10, I'm plus size. I'm still plus size. Okay. So, I also got more work. I started to dabble in the acting a little bit, and I got a lot more work when I gained a little bit of weight back, because they just didn't really know what to do with me being that thin, because, you know, from the neck down, I looked really young. I had a very thin teenage body. Okay. And then you look at my face, and it wasn't like I was a wrinkled old hag or something, but I clearly wasn't a 20-year-old. Okay. So it was this dichotomy that kind of created problems with casting and stuff like that. So when I put on a little bit more weight then and went up to like a size 8 or 10, then that was definitely better for my career.
Made you more regular.
So then that's how I started into the acting. And at first, like I said, it was really commercial industrial stuff, and I did pretty well with that. And then it got to be independent films, and that's where I really started to discover how cool that was to kind of do that sort of thing. And as you know, you and I got to work on a film together, and, you know, people like, you know, Sean Flanagan and Almaden Films, who can really put out some really great quality work and get some great actors as well. You know, you begin to realize, at least I did, I began to realize, look, I don't want to be an extra. I mean, I know there's a lot of people out there that want to be extras, and you can be on big movies and be an extra. You won't get any credit, and nobody will ever know that was you. But yeah, you could get in all kinds of big movies. That's where, oh, I was in this, and da da da. Really? Where were you? Well, I was standing behind Brad Pitt's ear right there. You know, you know what I mean? You know, so, but then when you go the indie circuit and work with filmmakers, they are, as if you fit the bill, if you're a good actor and you're what they need, generally you're going to get a better part. You're going to get a speaking part. You're going to get one that's a little bit more meaty. So I kind of figured that out. It was kind of like, oh, okay. Now, when I broke into LA about 3 years ago, then it was almost like starting all over again. It was like, okay, I got to start at the ground floor again, because they don't really know who I am. Okay. And the market there is completely different, because then if you're got all these A-list actors, well, then they're kind of still hiring all that kind of 200 plus actors out there that they book over and over and over again. You know, Matt said that too. He's like, there's like 200 working actors in LA, even though there's what, 10,000 like wannabes out there wanting to be in it. Okay. And they do that because, yes, nepotism is alive and well in Hollywood, and because it's a no-brainer for them. You know, if they've booked you on a show, David, and they say, hey, I know this guy's going to show up, I know he's going to be there, I know he's going to deliver this and that, I know him, we talk all the time, I booked him on this, I booked him on that, well, then they're going to just keep booking you, because they know they can trust you, rather than go, ah, let's go out and look and hope the person is good and hope they show up and hope they don't screw up the whole production. You know, that's really scary for them. It's also why, you know, Matt said the same thing too, which is why they don't often want to, nobody wants to be the first one to give you that break. You know, when you get out there, you're like, oh, she's really good, but, you know, nobody else ever booked her. And then nobody wants to take that leap.
Yeah.
You know, but supposedly when you break your cherry or whatever and get to that point, then the doors do start to open for you because they'll say, oh, look, Matt Caster or so-and-so Caster, that's that. Okay, well, I'll give her a shot.
No, we're talking about LA casting director Matt Berry, who also teaches as well. And I remember him going back to The Notebook when he acted in that, also cast that movie. So this is a guy who's been around the block and knows the tricks of the trade. Good dude.
He's good friends with John Cassavetes and everything too. So he does pretty much all of his movies and everything like that too.
Hey, what's the deal with this short film festival, this Carmel Digital Film Festival, the 5-minute thing shot on an iPad or iPhone?
So that is, they put on the Carmel Digital Film Festival. This is actually their very first year of doing it. Basically, their criteria was for you to enter it to be 12 and above, that you cannot have anything over 5 minutes long, has to be 5 minutes or under the short film, and it has to be shot entirely on a cell phone, an iPhone, or an iPad. Okay. So John Mark and I collaborated on this. He was able to get locations and places. He actually even wrote a song for it because we needed some music for the story. The story is called Open Mic. And he wrote the story, you know, based upon some things that I had told him, essentially, which is that I come from a family of musicians. My father was a singing star in the Philippines, recorded singing star in the Philippines, like in the 40s. My brother is also a musician and singer with his own theater company and everything like that in Los Angeles. And his son is also a recording artist and singer. And my son is an LA musician and plays bass for an artist called Tim Atlas and tours with him. And I have a brother-in-law, Kenny Neal, who is married to my sister, and he is a Grammy-nominated blues man. And so lots of music in my family. And as much as I do like to sing, and I have an okay voice, but I do not consider myself a singer at all. And so when I was telling John Mark about all of this, he just said, well, you know, he goes, who do you think, you know, when he was asking me about the story and stuff like that, he is, you know, was it your mom or your dad that kind of brought that into your life? I said, oh, it was definitely my dad. I go, my mom liked to sing, but she didn't sing very well. So he built that story about basically the character myself that I play in this film as a woman who has recently lost her father and is grieving that. And in the process of that, she's trying to find her voice, meaning it's really not even just my singing voice, but even just finding my place in the world, I guess, is that sort of thing like that. So in this little short 5-minute story, basically that is what happens, is that you see me taking voice lessons and he asked me to go to an open mic, and then I do that, and then I have to sing in front of all these people. So that was pretty scary. That was another big stretch for me to sing on film and to sing in front of, we did have a crowd of people out there that we actually got together and made a makeshift little coffee house club that for open mic. And so that wasn't hard to sound really shaky on the mic like this. Because I was pretty much feeling that when I had to get out there and sing. You
did
know?
Your solid background in karaoke help you out?
Yes. You know, I have to say it did. And I have you to thank for that, Mr. David Lewis. Yes, I do. Because I used to just also, like, people would try to take me out for karaoke and I would be like, yeah, it's okay. Yeah. I mean, that was just like absolute sheer terror. So, yes, I would definitely say that, you know, despite the fact that we'd been in Jimi Hendrix together, we never did a scene together. We'd never actually met. And when I approached you at that Bay to L.A., a party that was all the karaoke and things like that, and introduced myself and said, hey, we were in a movie together. And you were just Mr. On Fire when it came to, like, oh, karaoke, I'll get up, I'll do this. And I just was looking at you like, wow, he's just fearless. He just loves this, you know, not only singing, but like dancing and the whole thing, you know. And then, you know, as the night proceeded and you're like, oh, we could do this together. Let's do this. And I'm just like, okay.
Do you remember the song?
Yes. Yes, it was Endless Love, wasn't it? And your were like, oh, you were so funny. You were like blushing and like so cute because you were like embarrassed or something. Like, oh, I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed to be singing that. I was embarrassed to be in front of everybody. And oh my gosh. But yeah, I honestly have to tell you that that was sort of my virgin voyage of singing in front of people sort of thing. So yeah, there you go. Thanks to Mr. David Lewis there.
Well, sure. I think the world, it's in our nature. We all want to, maybe we don't think we can, but everybody wants to sing. They might not be afraid to do it or embarrassed to do it, but everybody wants to sing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so too. You know, that's why that used to be my standard answer when people say, oh, when, you know, when they'd find out, you know, if they were, especially if they're like my brother's friends or things like that. Oh, well, do you sing too? And yeah, in the shower. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's, I sing all the time. I sing in my car. When I go to LA, I'm singing the whole time. It's a whole concert. You know what I mean? But, yeah, that's just me, you know, on my own kind of thing. But yeah.
When you went through all these ups and downs with your weight and your health, how much of that really involves healing yourself from the inside out? I could take 40 pounds off you, but it doesn't heal your wounds and your demons and all the things that, you know, you're scarred with.
Wow. You know, that's a really big thing that I just basically found out, especially with dropping that kind of weight. I was not aware of how much the impact of both my emotional and mental state would come with the physical transformation. I think, you know, generally we think of, you know, okay, that's the physical thing. Okay, well, yeah, you probably feel better. You probably don't have as many aches and pains and all that stuff. And if you're eating better and exercising, then okay, you're getting the benefits of all of that. So that part I can totally get. But when you have that amount of stuff, it does transform so many things. Okay, for one thing, for me, a big part of the reasons are the things that made me like that: bad habits, utilizing food as comfort or boredom or all the above or whatever, just anything more than just nutrition for your body. It becomes crucial to start to face those things. Okay. Otherwise, I don't think that you can be successful. I don't think I would have been able to A, lose the weight, and B, keep it off. Okay. Is because you just keep doing the same thing. Then, as they say, you keep doing what you're doing, you keep getting what you're getting. So you have to change. And in doing so, you now have to uncover all those emotional feelings and thoughts and habits that you've done all your life that got me into that spot. Okay. Nobody was holding me down, putting that food in my mouth. I was the one doing it. Okay. Well, why was I overeating? Why was I doing this? Why was I doing that? So yes, you do have to go through this metamorphosis of you, of yourself and your psyche and your mind. And also because when you lose that kind of weight, there is a complete perception shift of the way that people talk to you, look at you, accept you, not accept you, whatever, that wasn't there before. And this was clearly evident to me, especially as I became a model. And, you know, I just was always like, hey, I'm just me. This is me. This is Nina, you know, funny Nina or happy Nina or, you know, personable Nina. And to walk into a room and get this vibe from women, especially, like, look at that.
Right.
Cattiness. You know? Yeah. Just real catty. And this whole, I just was like, I don't get that. What's that all about? I just didn't understand it because I'd never had that before. But suddenly, because I look like this, it was like, oh my goodness, they're just going to judge me before they even know anything about me. And I wasn't used to that. I didn't know what that was. I'd be like, what? You know, and then when they would talk to me and they'd be like, wow, you're really nice. You're not even stuck up. I'm like, well, what made you think that I was?
Well, because you're hot. Yeah. You know, hot people are stuck up.
I guess, you know, and, you know, okay, in all fairness, I will say this, that, you know, when I met with women or other people that were, you know, like you say, hot, gorgeous, whatever you want to call it, and, you know, yeah, they did kind of have an attitude, or they were kind of standoffish, or they were kind of whatever you want to call stuck up. Or this sort of thing like that. I think that I began to understand that somebody who is born like that or has lived the majority of their life like that, they've learned the defense mechanism because they've had to face that so many times of people just judging them the moment they see them, before they even talk to them. And so they kind of automatically come in like, yeah, I already know. You looking me up and down. I know. You already thinking this, you know, like they're like defensive. And so they tend to come across as bitchy, stuck up, all the above, whatever you want to say. Okay. But it's very unfortunate that it's because what I experienced, like I said, in having that, it just always just was like, I don't understand why you're acting like that or why you're being this way. And getting that surprised look like, oh my gosh, you're actually pretty nice. It's like, yeah, that's just who I am, you know? It's like, you know, but that's because they're not used to equating the two.
Right.
You know?
You might not have been given a chance before to show that you're nice or they like you because they're judging you as this fat girl, you know, that can't control her food or whatever.
Which just make me laugh because I was like, girl, I ain't taking your boyfriend. He could be my son. And I was like, you know, these young girls, they'd be all like, you know, they're all just talking to you. And it's just like, yeah, it's because they ain't never seen a woman like me before. I go, they don't know anybody like that. I go, you know, they're when they find out how old I am, then they're like, that's like, oh, my grandma is.
Oh,
you're like, that's right. You can be my son, so you need to stop.
I wish I could tap into the psyche of people that lose all that weight and are able to keep it off because so many people yo-yo. Lose it, gain it, lose it, gain it. And they haven't dealt with the issues that caused you to balloon in the first place and that, you know, inner wounding.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And it's not an overnight process. I mean, even what I'm trying to do now is just, you know, I've spent, you know, I'm okay. So let's just, here, you know, this is going to be, you know, a big year for me. This is, you know, a decade later down the line here. And so I, you know.
Never mind. I'm just putting that all together. Anyway, go ahead.
That math there. Okay. Which that kind of means that I'm sort of at that place that they always with actors that, ew, it's going to take you a good 10 years. You know, it's like, okay, that's about. It's about right, you know, because I'm ready to launch here, you know, is that just getting to that place of just being able to make peace with food, for lack of a better way to put it. I mean, honestly, I know I have an addictive personality. I know that I've utilized food and other substances in my quest of addiction. Okay. And even though I've been able to stop and put aside certain other addictions, you know, food is the hardest because you have to eat. Okay. And in any other addiction, it's cold turkey. You need to stop smoking. You're addicted to cigarettes. You have to stop, period. You're addicted to drinking. Well, no, you can't just have a beer. You can't have any ever. Okay. You know, or any other drug or whatever. Well, you can't do that with food. Okay. So what I found through, you know, my quest of just trying to make peace with all of that is that there's very specific foods that I just have to omit from my diet. Okay. And by doing that, I need to weigh and measure my food and I need to eat at certain times. And by doing that, that's allowed me to not only lose the weight that I kept gaining, losing, like you said, but to finally stabilize and to be at a right size and not be in a constant panic all the time of like, oh my gosh, you know, I've gained weight again. I went out on vacation. I came back, you know, just to be able to be normal and just know that you can always maintain has been huge, you know, but it's all a process still because I've spent all these years of my life, and especially being Filipino, you know, food is love, man, you know, and food is entertainment and food is everything beyond just I need nourishment to survive. Okay. And to get to the place of just eating food because that is pretty difficult for me, but I'm doing it. It's just, it's very difficult. And it's a process for me that I'm having to learn, you know.
That must be tough in a social setting, right? When everyone else is able to, and you're trying to, you know, maintain some discipline and no, you know, my program says I need to, you know,
exactly.
Wow.
And you know what's really hard is because, you know, if you say like, oh, well, I'm on a diet or something, you know, people will be like, oh, come on, it's just a bite, or you're thin, you don't need, you know, you're going to get all that. If you say, you know, they offer you a drink and you say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm an alcoholic, you know, they're like, oh, okay. You know, like they're usually quite giving and understanding, you know, of something like that, because, you know, God forbid, we don't want to have you have a binge or something like that and go off the wagon, right? But they don't quite give you the same respect when you tell them, well, I just don't really eat flour or sugar, okay? Because that's kind of my big thing, is I don't eat flour and sugar. That still leaves me a lot of things that I can eat, but flour and sugar is in a lot of things. It's in almost everything, okay? So, you know, that's a broad, you know, swipe, you know? And so, and it's hard when you have family members too that just don't get it, or, you know, again, culturally for us, if you don't eat our food, it makes us feel like you don't like us.
Yeah.
They kind of equate it the same. Basically like saying, oh God, no, I don't want to eat what you made me. No. You know, or, you know, that's certainly not what you're trying to say, but that is very often how it can be misconstrued. Okay. So it's hard. It's very hard.
No. Viewed as disrespectful for not eating it.
Correct. Yep.
Poor
like
dear.
I said, in our culture, in the Philippine culture, they don't even there's a term. It's called it says kaina. So when I say, hi Dave, kaina, and that means, did you eat? Okay, that's not hi, how you doing, how you feeling, have a seat, whatever. That's the first thing they want to know is like, did you eat? Okay. And because because it's the answer to everything. Oh, you're tired. Sit down. Let me get you. Oh, you're mad. Okay. Here, I'll get you some, you know, it's the cure for everything.
Yeah.
I don't need to ask you how you are. I'm going to feed you and that'll take care of it. So. Yeah.
Is there one food that just makes you weak in the knees, like, gosh, I love this, but I can't have very much of it?
Yeah, actually, I'm kind of a sushi whore. I really do love, I love sushi. I love going out for sushi and things like that. Now, I can have sashimi in measured portions, sort of things like that, but I just can't have the rice anymore, you know. But I do really like that. More than even, you know, sugar cakes, cookies, chocolate, whatever. I mean, I like all that. Don't get me wrong. I like it. It's just, it's not one of those things that make me just go like, you know, whereas, you know, I think, I don't know if it's just, I just like all the variations. I like the sushi experience. I like having sake. You know, I don't know if it's probably a little bit of all of those things. Okay. But I really do like, and then I always feel like I'm eating pretty healthy for the most part when I have that. Cause it's like, oh, it's good. It's protein, you know, it's good. And this and this, you know? So I don't know why that is, but yeah, that would probably be the one, you know, I can still eat, you know, like sashimi, and technically I could have some rice. It's like measured and weighed, but that's sort of that rice is kind of like crack cocaine for me. I try not to do that because then there's no end. It'll be like, oh no, there's no bowl big enough. I need more. So I just better for me to kind of like just not do that. Yeah.
Sure. So there's no sweet thing, because my favorite guilty pleasure is, I'm giving him a plug, this Jack in the Box Oreo cookie shake.
Ooh.
And maybe once every couple months. That's the only thing I'll go in there for. But it is amazing. And it is very crackish.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Whipped cream, cherry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
1,500 calories. Insane.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I really, really, really wish I could still eat is peanut butter and Nutella. Even separately or corporately. And it's just a combination of taste, sweet, salty, and texture. It's like it kind of rings all my bells. It's kind of like, I love that. I don't even have to put it on anything. It's like, yeah, just give it to me.
I never thought about the whole salty with sweet thing. And then there are people that actually will dip French fries into shake and love that. I've never done that, but it's that mixture of the salt and the sweet that, you know, tastes really good.
That's a very Asian thing. That's a very, I know it's a big thing in Filipino food, but it's very Asian. Most Asian people I talk to, they all go, oh, yeah, they really get it. They totally understand that. Have you ever had a Luther burger? You know what that is?
No.
So Luther Vandross, which poor man, rest in peace. he invented this, and that might have been the cause of his demise. Because essentially it's a barbecued cheeseburger in between a Krispy Kreme donut.
Oh. That's disgusting.
That's the epitome of the salty sweet, baby. Yeah. And I've had one, and they are freaking out of this world.
Really?
They're amazing. Yeah, I mean, if you like that, I mean, most people get disgusted by, because they're like, oh my God. It's like, oh, you have no idea. That meat and the salty and that sweetness and lightness of the donut. Now, mind you, I could only eat like 2 bites of it. And after that, I was like, I can't do anymore. But I thought it tasted amazing. I thought it was really good.
Sounds like a county fair item, right?
I know. It's like the fried Oreo.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Or like a Monte Cristo. Isn't like a Monte Cristo kind of the same sort of thing? They have, do you know what that is? That's a sandwich.
Yeah.
I think it's like a melted ham sandwich, but it has like jam or something in it.
That sounds
like a ham and cheese, a grilled ham and cheese or something. That's jam.
We got on this weird tangent with food. Hey, back to business. who in the profession, what big time actors do you really admire for what they do?
Wow.
Or who would you like to work with? That'd be awesome. But besides me.
Yeah. Okay. Honestly, I like all the really quirky. I would love to work with Quentin Tarantino. I would love to be in anything that he does. And even the type of actors that he takes along with him and that he kind of puts into his thing. There's another case in point for nepotism. You see how he has his posse of people that he tends to put the same ones. He may mix it up a little bit, but he basically, you're going to see these people in his movies. Coen brothers, same sort of thing. I would love to work with, as far as, I have tremendous admiration for, probably because they're kind of closer to my age and because they've really proven themselves and been able to break out of a lot of molds. Judi Dench, what's her name? Helen Mirren. Yeah. And, Kate Blanchett, Kate Winslet. All British people go there, but then you have like your very strong characters on TV now, because TV has become such a big thing. Ellen Barkin in Animal Kingdom, Taraji P. Jensen in Empire, those are the type of roles that I would pretty much sell my firstborn son for.
A strong independent woman then?
Yeah, definitely. And it took me a while to really understand what my brand was and what it was that I could put out there as an actress. And I think it evolved over the years as well. And what's very important about all of that is that if you don't understand what that is, it's like having a business and really not knowing what your product is. So that when somebody comes knocking to say, oh yeah, I think I want to get some of that, well, what does it do? Or what does it have? Or what is it? And you're going, if you're doing that, then you've lost your sale. Okay. You know what I mean? They're not there because it's like, well, they don't even know what the thing does. You know what I mean? So when you have a strong brand and you understand what that is, then, it's less about, oh, I need to lose 20 pounds, or, oh, I need to dye my hair, or I need to do this or that. I mean, it's all great however you want to look and present yourself. I mean, I think that's fantastic. But understand that when you have a strong brand, a lot of that can be very irrelevant, because they're just going to hire you because you look specifically that way, or you bring to the role this particular thing. And, you can have variations on the theme, but at the same time, like I said, I could look at Taraji P. Jensen and look at Ellen Barkin, two very different actresses, bring two very different things to each role, but yet I would say they're very close in brand in terms of what it is that they bring, and that you are drawn to watch when they're doing roles, that kind of thing.
Hey, I got to get myself a burger on a donut in a minute. So I want to plug your show one more time, the Liberace One Man Play. Give us the date, the when, the where, and how someone could get tickets.
So tickets are available through tickets J as in John, M as in Mary, H as in Henry, @gmail.com. So it's tickets, JMH, @gmail.com. And it opens on August 9th, and it runs through August 30th. And performances on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, as a matter of fact. And you will be able to find the address when you look for the tickets on the online there.
Hey, that Luther burger is between 800 and 1,500 calories.
Oh, did you look it up?
It's on Wikipedia. Oh, my God.
Yeah, plus it's... See, I did not make this thing up, okay? When you know that the guy died of basically stroke and heart failure, it's kind of like, well, yeah.
That thing looks disgusting.
It's disgusting, but it's so good. Oh, gosh. So anyway, yeah. I will actually send you some more. So we're trying to get together a little poster together that I can put together for Liberace so I can start promoting that on social media as well. Okay. So it's going to be a great show, though. It's going to be definitely entertaining and, a lot of fun. Just a lot of fun.
You can count on me to pimp your show, anything you do, okay?
Absolutely.
Nina, throw out your social media information if people want to follow you, whether it's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, whatever.
Okay, so you can find me on facebook.com/rightchoicemodel. That's how you can find me. Or just look up Nina Martina. You'll find it on there. I am abfab forever, A-B-F-A-B forever on Instagram. And I am Nina Martina 1 on Twitter.
What does ab fab forever mean?
Absolutely fabulous.
Okay.
There actually is a British show called Absolutely Fabulous that is absolutely amazing. The actresses that are in it are just stellar actresses and comedians. It's been long, long running for a long time. I'm not sure that it's still running anymore, but it was on for decades and decades. It's called Absolutely Fabulous. I would love that show. It's a great show. But when I went to go get my moniker for Instagram, Nina Martina was already taken. And so I just was like, well, I think I'll be Ab Fab forever. So I really wasn't thinking necessarily of that show. I mean, I was, but, and that's also the nickname that a lot of people, in Britain know when you say Ab Fab, they know what Ab Fab is because they know that show. It's like saying Seinfeld, like saying something out of Seinfeld. Most people would know what that was. Okay. But I wasn't sure how many people actually knew it here in the United States. And so I just thought, well, I'll take a chance, Ab Fab forever, absolutely forever, fabulous forever.
I think that's very appropriate.
Thank you.
Keep in touch with me, young lady.
I will. And it's always been such a great pleasure. And I'm looking forward to working with you in the future. And thank you so much for this opportunity, David.
Oh, I love you too.
Thank you so much to Nina Martina. The executive producer is Hunter Lewis. You can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube. We appreciate your positive feedback and comments. Certainly helps out a lot. I'm David Lewis. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll talk to you next time.